views, information, or opinions expressed during Angel Answers with Amy Toys series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily are the opinions of those of the host, BBS Radio, and its affiliates and its producers. The show, its host, BBS Radio, and affiliates and its producers are not responsible and does not verify the accuracy of any of the information contained in this series. The primary purpose of this series is to educate and inform. This series does not constitute medical, legal, or other professional advice or services. The series is available for private, non-commercial use only. Any portion of this series may not be copied, reproduced, or edited without written consent by the host or its producer. And welcome to Angel Answers with Amy Toy. I am a clairvoyant, clairsentient radio show host, author myself, and I am very privileged to have a guest named Danian Brinkley. How you doing today, Danian? How you doing?
I'm doing fabulous, Amy.
And you and I have a lot in common. I've had two near-death experiences. I've wanted to have you on for the longest time. And your book, Saved by the Light, saved my butt in 2000 when I had my second near-death experience because
wow.
I was so confused. I was so, so confused. You know,
they have a way of near-death experiences have a way of creating that quite often, Amy.
Yeah, for the first 2 years of that, I started opening up again psychically because I had shut everything down. So that was very interesting. And near one of your books, actually, I remembered when I was a kid, you were on Unsolved Mysteries. I'm talking way back in the day. And I remembered your story. And I went to the library and I got your book out. And I read it from cover to cover a couple different times. And you saved my life. Let me just say that. I'm very grateful.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. And now you are on to other and bigger and better things today. Explain to us a little bit about your background, besides the near-death experiences, your spiritual path. You also got me into another vocation work, but let's get into that in a minute.
Well, I grew up in South Carolina, you know, and religiously everybody goes to hell in South Carolina. Alabama, Mississippi, you know, Georgia, Kentucky, Tennessee, everybody goes to hell down there. And so I didn't have very much of a religious background, I had absolutely no context to spirituality.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't care much about religion, so spirituality was just another next in foolishness.
Mm-hmm.
I played sports. You know, I grew up sports and a fist fighter. Then I discovered the United States Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. Then I discovered a series of three-letter organizations that use now what they call they have a new name. They had a name long before that that you never could use, but now they're called contractors.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yes.
So I was in the contractor business, and I never would have believed that I would become this person. I mean,
yeah.
On September the 17th at 7:05 p.m. on a Wednesday afternoon during a thunderstorm, I was struck by lightning. And the transformation that occurs in the awareness of what happens when you understand that you are spiritually energetic more than you are mentally physical.
Mm-hmm.
And dealing with that, and, you know, I was dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months, and it took me 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. So I went through an evolution of going from Superman to paralysis and then all the things in between. But in the course of it, I had what is now known as a near-death experience, which in those days, in 75, was an unheard-of phenomena and literally ridiculed across the basis of the known Western medical world. But here we are now, 40 years later, and we're a part of mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a near-death experience is used in movies, TV shows, casual conversation, and the fact that it's almost impossible for someone now to deny the fact that there is this phenomena that's mm-hmm. occurring based on cardiopulmonary resuscitation techniques.
Oh, yeah. I remember my second one. My first one, I had a bit of an impact. The second one was the most impactful for me. Remember them beating on my chest, and 6 months later, I'm still feeling those pains. Black and blue, everything. Yeah. I just, oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine going through that again. And you've had how many?
Three.
Wow.
One death and two near-death experiences. Struck by lightning, open heart surgery, brain surgery, mental, physical, and spiritual. Think of how funny they are. Struck by lightning, in Black's legal terms, it's called an act of God. So that would be spiritual. Open heart surgery. That would be emotional. Mm-hmm. And then brain surgery, that would be physical.
Mm-hmm.
So they go after my spiritual self, my heart, and my mind.
Wow.
Till that crowd had a lot to do.
Yeah.
People say, Daniel, why do you think it's happened to you? I said, it's very easy. Mm-hmm. They completely run out of messiahs. They were scraping the absolute bottom of the barrel, and they were all down at the cloud bar doing angel shots, and they said, I got an idea. Let's go kill Daniel. He's a jackass. Let's see how well he handles all of this.
Oh, my God.
Ta-da!
Yeah. Yeah, you were, in the book, I remember, you were a bit of a bully, if I remember correctly. It's been a while since I've read the book.
I think
book.
Even more than that. I mean, I was a complete domineering, I'm a big guy, a good fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just that was how I thought, you know, fear more than respect was a more important personality trait. And I was a good fighter, good at sports, and great Marine. And, you know, that was just the mindset that I lived in. Until one day I discovered that physically is a ridiculous, to think in terms of physical is a ridiculous mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you think in terms of physical first, then you're only dealing with gratification and preservation. If you deal with spiritual, then you're dealing with celebration.
Oh, I like that. I like that. That's
what does a physical being does? It either seeks gratification or it seeks preservation. But what does a spiritual being do? What does spiritual beings do? They celebrate. They celebrate life and the joy of being able to be. Think of this, Amy. Think of another life or another existence where everything that you think that the divine is, everything that you think spiritual divinity is or God is, you have the capability of doing and being that every single day of your life. Mm-hmm. From what is this life about? It's about opportunity. It's mm-hmm. about being able to be caring and loving and compassionate, to be supportive and loving and protective, to give comfort, to give insight, to give wisdom, to be a guardian of people's beliefs and strengths. And that's everything we ever hope that the divine world is. We get a chance to act it out in this existence.
Interesting. I like that, yes.
Now, to go from a complete jackass to this nature that I'm in now, which is like trying to reduce people's fear of what we call this absurd concept called death. There is nothing more ridiculous than the thought that you will die and go to heaven or hell.
Mm-hmm.
That's so ridiculous.
It is. It really is. And then when I tell people my experiences with my two near deaths, they're like, really? And I've helped actually relatives cross over. I'm like, just go to the light. Don't be afraid of death. Embrace it. And
party.
It's your time to go. You know, especially when my dad died, he asked me, he goes, you've been on the other side. What is it like? And I said, it's the most peaceful, beautiful existence you'll ever have. And he crossed over very much. He was so sick for 2 years. And it was a gift for me to help him through that transition.
No, it's, I mean, people don't understand where this fear of death structures such a fear-based reality, so that if you use the term like terrorism, where you always are afraid and preservation becomes your driver as opposed to expansion, then It's always amazing that the world that we live in, they know as much about the spiritual unfoldment of this particular time and everything that can be done to keep you from focusing and absorbing the new revelatory energy that's come into play. Then they keep that fear-based preservation point in play. I mean, people have to understand it's planned. Everything that you see that's happening around us is a planned exercise to keep you distracted.
Yes, it is. I feel for myself, and maybe you can relate to this, when you're distracted, it's like you're off your spiritual path. I know when I'm distracted, when I'm not in alignment, I don't know if you want to use that term, with what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know.
No, I agree, and this is what quote-unquote terrorism, quote-unquote overwhelming migration, breaking down of social psychological order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is all planned. There is no, when you sit back and watch it as long as I've watched it, plus put in Saved by the Light when I wrote Chapter 5, The Boxes of Knowledge, it was the information that I'd received that I didn't really realize then, Amy, it was the future, the probable possibilities of what the future were. But I always realized that those things, I call that part Nostradamian, because I always make fun of everything. You know, what are they going to do? What are they going to do, kill us? Well, big deal. Who in the world is that frightened? You know, and so when I think about it, I look at how structurally, spiritually, and emotionally, look at Syria. Look at why Syria. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the reason? Because most people don't know about the Levant. And it's the ancient story. It's the story of ancient Syria. And it's called Greater Syria in the Middle East. And watching Syria and Persia unite is going to be a really, really scary place for most of the ancient Palestinian, Sumeria, Canaanite, Judeans, or what you would call Israel, Syria, Lebanon, and Persia, Iran, and Iraq.
Which it's so true. When you are, I call it touched by the light. Sometimes what will happen is you're privy to information that maybe other people aren't. And you have done a lot of prophesying over the years. And when I got into that part of Saved by the Light back in the day, I didn't understand everything until now. When you can see the bigger picture, how do you do that? How do you see the bigger picture, really?
Well, what happens is you realize that there is an organization of people who know as much about spiritual unfoldment and how it operates in cycles in our planetary influence. And their job is to keep you from awakening. Their job is to keep you, because as long as we are sheeple, as long as we allow what we see happen, we have Congress, and a Congress that has allowed us to go 19, 20, 21 trillion when this new budget comes out, $21 trillion in debt. Okay, and these are our elected officials, and do they care about raising the debt limit? No. Why? Because they know the system is going to and has already collapsed. So it's the new system that comes into play. It's like the Maya, Amy. The Maya had a set of calendars called the Mayan calendar that said in 2012 what was going to be called the galactic period would collapse. Well, they said that like 3,000 years ago. But then in 2008, well, beginning in 2001, then in 2008, we collapsed as a nation. We collapsed. We are a bankrupt, collapsed nation.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we are at the present. Well, I wrote that down in 1976. So as we look at where our so-called elected officials, we are too busy trying to make the paycheck. We're too busy trying to stay afloat and too busy trying not to be a part of a lone wolf terrorist plot that we have no time to meditate, no time to look at the level of stress that we're under. And now we're reduced to pills, where it's pills that keep us from having to face our spiritual reality of what we're supposed to do. I think it's pretty amazing how easily people fall for not realizing they're spiritual beings. And all you have to do is make them afraid for their life or pain. And at that point, all the things that we pray, hope, believe, and think, and for Christians who died for their sins, quote unquote, that Christian concept, if that was in play and half of those who follow that leaning, then they would be the ones empowered to make change. But are they? No.
Mm-mm. No, they're not. No. No. And it's, you know, and I'm a psychic reader, a healer, you know, and I just see how people that are so asleep, like you said, you know, so fear. They watch the news. I don't watch the news. I personally don't like it. It just affects my being way too much. You know, I keep abreast of things. But, you know, they're you're right. They're taking pills. They're sleepwalking until something really shakes them to the core. I noticed in 2012 there was a shift. Some people were awakening. I didn't know if you felt that, but I...
Oh, no question. I mean, I'm a big Maya.
Yeah.
I have studied the Maya since 1968. You know, wow. It was my only adventure into the world other than the material, physical warrior concept. But when I went to see the 68 Olympics, and I started looking at the pre-classic Maya, you know, the pre-classic Mayan structure, and there is no way that 2 hours from Houston you can disprove 80% of the archaeological history of the known world. In 2 hours, you can completely disprove it. That everything they tell us about whether there was an advanced civilization or whether there was not an intelligence greater than the one that we historically and anthropologically look at existed. And it's 2 hours from Houston. You can go down to Mesoamerica, to Yucatan, and into Guatemala, Honduras, Belize, and you can see these structures that are built so absolutely magnificently. And you can go to India and see the exact same things. In Mesoamerica, they use dragons or Quetzalcoatl, the serpent angel, the feathered serpent. But in India, they have creatures carved in the same places, beings carved in the same places, and the exacting of the science of the construction is beyond belief. So when I went down there and as a kid, I was waiting for the Olympics and I wanted to see track and field and boxing. And between boxing and track and field, they had water polo and synchronized dancing and diving. Who cares about any of that? So a guy, I'm 18 years old, I'm a tough guy, and a guy said, "You want to go see the pyramids?" And I just laughed. I said, "There's no such thing as any pyramids. They're all in Egypt." Mm-hmm. Well, we got in the car and drove for about 2 hours, and we parked at night in this field, and we found this flashlight. We found this rock, and I put my bedroll on the rock, and I went to sleep. And when I woke up in the morning, I was at the what's called the altar in front of the Pyramid of the Moon in Teotihuacan. And that was the end of my belief in normal history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and so once you look at it, 2012 was the end of the galactic series, which means all things dot-done integrity would collapse, and our entire world collapsed because it's not built in integrity. Well, mm-hmm. The new period that began in 2012, there's a 400-day grace period, and then you implement it. So we would probably be... We would probably right now be in the first year of the new age, and it's called the universal period. Where, and the quote for the universal period, now this is 3,000 years old, is no secrets. And so we see this thing about NASA with Snowden. We see all these hundreds of programs used. We're recording more American conversations than we are any other country's conversations by billions. Huh. And when you start to look at that, I think of that. So I always try to realize that the control that you can go back and piece together and edit and destroy anybody from conversations just like this. So I thought about it, and I looked at my my Samsung phone. So I decided that I always would carry it in my back left hip pocket so that the NSA knows that they can always just kiss my ass. Did you boys get that?
I say more than that, okay, and I'm being gracious.
But people expect, call it the Swami business, people expect us to be something other than who we are.
Yeah.
I am a spiritual being, and I know this without any question. I am a great, powerful, and mighty spiritual being with dignity, direction, and purpose. The only thing that can ever go wrong with a spiritual being's life is they allow something to affect their dignity. And in the course of allowing things to affect their dignity, then they, as each step is taken forward, they're taking more away from themselves. Because we affect our dignity. You're not pretty enough, smart enough, healthy enough, wise enough, rich enough. You're not the Kardashians. Well, if you were all of those things, then you just need to make a sex tape.
I wouldn't want to be the Kardashians anyway.
Who in the world? I mean, I don't want to speak bad about anybody, but who in the world can comprehend that you can be famous for nothing and make $100 million for being famous for nothing? That means we live in delusional. And what spiritual growth comes from that show?
None.
What spiritual growth? There is nothing. The protection of a mother. How the girls all call their mother names, but yet they jump to her defense is the only quality. Because I have one of our kids. It's like one of their favorite shows.
Huh.
I don't understand it myself. I sat down and watched it. The one I like best is Rob.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's interesting. They're all interesting. I don't watch it. I've only seen, snippets of it, like I said.
I saw three episodes because I didn't have any choice.
Yeah, no choice. Were you chained to the bed?
Well, it's just like this. I have seven girls.
Oh, okay.
I have five that's mine. I have one daughter-in-law, and I have a wife. So I have five of my own. I have a daughter-in-law, and I have cats. So I have, on any given day, I'm in competition with seven other women. It's exciting. They're like dachshunds.
You and my dad must have gotten along really well because we never got along. He had all these women in the house, and he was the only male. Then we got a male dog, and he was all happy. But anyway.
I take most of the stuff that people take so serious or is not serious to me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a direct purpose of what I'm supposed to be doing, and I never move from that place. And then I have a viewpoint based on that I've seen the bigger picture. I've seen the divineness of this action. And I see so many of the laws that govern things that we never pay attention to or that we think don't matter once we become in crisis. But people have to understand one of the major factors about life in this physical, mental form is how much in service that you are. And the key, Amy, is this.
Mm-hmm.
When you are in just as much danger or just as threatened as the person you're trying to help becomes the measure of your greatness. When you are, every morning when a person wakes up, they're in just as much danger or just as much of a threat threatening external as well as internal forces, and yet they're willing to serve and to care and to help. This is where your marks of greatness come in. And this is why you choose this form of physical existence. There are many forms, but you choose this form of physical existence, basically just a water treatment plant. If you look at a body, you're just a big bag of water, and you're a water treatment plant. You take in everything that you eat, and you extract the liquid and the water from it, and you, which nutrition and minerals you extract from it through the digestive system, but still just a water treatment plant.
Interesting. Yes, yes. And like I like that you're saying spiritual being, that's what you need to focus on. The physical stuff, forget it.
Well, you have to identify a person. You and I have no choice.
Right.
You don't have a choice about whether you're a spiritual being or not. It's a foregone conclusion, and that you're a spiritual being before you became a physical being, and you will be a spiritual being after you are a physical being. I mean, when Catherine and I wrote Secrets of the Light, people don't understand that I wrote Saved by the Light, At Peace in the Light, and The Secrets of the Light. And this is the adventures of Damien. They go from a complete prick to a guy that raised himself up from the dead, who is now in his 40th year as a hospice volunteer. The biggest thing that people must understand today, Amy, and I hope that they grab this, is when you have a panoramic life review, which is, I live my whole life based on these three panoramic life reviews, and I've studied the panoramic life review in near-death cases for 40 years. I mean, if you have a near-death experience, all I care about is the panoramic life review. I don't care about all that other stuff. I understand most of it. You know, like that being that everybody meets, Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, Muhammad, Allah, Grandmama, all those beings that everybody says they meet at the end of the tunnel. That being is you. That being is you. After going through these experiences and watching for it and paying attention, that's your higher self. No one ever disconnects from heaven. This whole Lucifer, Satan, devil, you know, all the names, you know that the devil had to be in the witness protection program with all the names that fool's got.
Yes, true.
Yeah, think about it. We got so many names in 50 countries. Jesus Christ, poor boy. He probably had a couple of facelifts and stuff. So when you listen to that, a spiritual person who's had a near-death experience can't even grip that as a reality. No one ever leaves heaven. You never go anywhere. You project a certain aspect of yourself into this quasar quantitative dimensional reality, hologram, so that you can experience it. When people look at me and they, Catherine and I's new book, it says 10 things to know before you go. I mean, I take years to write simple books, but to Catherine, it's a flow. Things flow. And she has such a beauty in how things flow from her. Me, I am tactical. Every word matters. You know, every word matters. So in this new book, what I was saying earlier is I write these books because I can look at situations, especially in palliative and end-of-life care, which is my specialty, and I can look at these things, and I can see a broader perspective about it. And by going through this, like I was saying earlier, the most important thing is the panoramic life review and what you do once you see your entire life pass before you in a 360-degree panorama. You watch it from a second-person point of view as if you were your own best friend. That's when you realize what kind of sense of humor you really have. And then you literally will become every person that you ever encounter. And you will feel the direct results of your interaction between you and every person that you've encountered. Well, in my first panoramic life review, I mean, my God, I hit myself in the face probably once or twice a day. I shot myself a few times. I mean, you don't realize that everything that you're doing, you're really doing it to yourself. Mm-hmm. Once you grasp that for just a second, you know, and then the final part after you become every person, it's not about what you do, it's why you do it. It's your intention that has the power. But at the end, there is always this point, you know, like they call it the great book of judgment. If God couldn't come today, or if whatever you believe to be divine could not come today, and they sent you, in the life you just reviewed, what difference did you and God make? Well, that's my sermon. I mean, that's the Danyan, you know, mantra. Well, what did I do? Well, I became a hospice volunteer for veterans because I know what they go through. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going to be every person that I ever encounter, and if God couldn't come today and God sent me, then what difference did me and God make? We're at the bedside of people who are fighting their last battle, mm-hmm. who need closure. And they need a structural system. That's why I invented the Twilight Brigade, which now, August the 9th, the Twilight Brigade will be 20 years old, operating under a memorandum of understanding with the Veterans Administration. And I'm in the same offices I've been in for 20 years in the West Los Angeles PA. So if I'm going to, what difference did God and I make? Mm-hmm. The difference we made was that I'm going to be that person who I'm sitting at that bedside with. And I'm listening to them talk and helping them find value and closure. So what happens when my life passes before me, I'm going to get a chance to be that person looking up at me, with me there, supporting, helping, loving, and being as responsive and as interested and as dedicated to the value of their life, with all the guilt that war places on people and all the things that come back and you live with that have created in that in honor of protecting us. I'm going to be that person. Mm-hmm. So I am now 40 years of hospice volunteer. I have 33,000 hours at the bedside. I've been with 2,010 people going from this world to the next world. And I've been with 346 taking their last breath.
Wow.
So I don't just talk all this.
I
live it. And if people take away anything today, Amy, if your life has a value, then it's easy to measure. If God couldn't come today and the divine sent you, when you see a situation that pulls your heartstrings, you react to it. And you're just as much as in danger as whatever you think you're trying to help. A bus could hit you going over to help an older lady get across the street. I mean, that's how I'm framing it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this making any sense to you? Is this a boring conversation?
No, it's not. No, I'm just listening. I'm just taking it in because that's what I would like to do, leave my mark. I volunteer for hospice. I've been with
Thank
people.
You.
And you inspired me to do that, by the way. You know, and I felt that I needed to bring my experience to people, too, my near-death, what happened to me, which was a little different than yours. I was treated the opposite. I felt I was told basically I needed to honor myself more. I was allowing people to use me as a doormat. That was my near-death experience, one of my experiences.
And what it teaches you.
Yeah, it does. It teaches you, and it really does. And I remember my mom saying to me, "You're not the daughter. I don't know what happened. You died." And I said, "No, I just came back a new model, Mom, new improved."
Well, that's what everybody tried so hard in those days to get me to go back to being the jackass that I was, and there was no way back. Once you experience the first one was so phenomenal, and I laid in a bed for a year. I mean, there was nothing I could do, and I would travel through all these dimensions. And you have to realize, Amy, I had no idea. None of what this was, you know, what this experience was. And I'd never heard of it, remember, in 1975. But here's how funny God is. Excuse me. I always, always relate to God in the feminine. Mm-hmm. Because while I was over there, I never quite came across anything that I would relate to as masculine energy. But I don't think I would relate to it as feminine energy. But I can relate to it as a sensual nature, a kind of like a tingling feeling. It's like when I wake up in the morning and Catherine's in the bed next to me. You know, I wake up and I see her, then there is a sense that if she's breathing, all is right with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a sensual. So when you look at how all of this is structured, then Dr. Raymond Moody, who wrote mm-hmm. Life After Life, who coined the phrase near-death experience, mm-hmm. he was the coin of the phrase. He was going to medical school in the hospital they brought me into.
Oh, okay.
And so most people don't realize that in my submission to the hospital in the emergency room, it says patient unconscious, patient not breathing, no EKG. Mm. Well, if you're unconscious and you're not breathing and you have no EKG for at least 28 minutes,
mm-hmm. yes.
what's that tell you in 1975?
You're dead, man.
Yeah, they just covered me up, rolled me in this room because they were busy that night. It was some really bad thunderstorms, lightning, that knocked out a lot of power, a lot of people with secondary discharges, mm-hmm. you know, all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, they always say if you go without oxygen to your brain for 5 minutes, you have some kind of problem. Well, you know, that explains part of what's wrong with me, but not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So... then in those days, it was very easy, and for someone to even consider the near-death experience, oxygen brain deprivation, temporal lobe seizures, frontal lobe seizures, anaphylactic shock, every other reason other than that no one dies. You don't die, it just doesn't happen, because what the real war is, and this is the thing that I've always said this for 40 years, that the battle for the souls of humankind would be fought in healthcare. So whether people understand it or not today,
mm-hmm.
the battle for their consciousness, for their right to grow spiritually and expand under rules that would dictate a certain amount of safety, it is a terrorism we need to be paying attention. It's to health care. And mm-hmm. the controlling mechanisms being put in place in health care. You know, affordable health care was horrible. But mm-hmm. this new Republican revision of affordable health care, mm-hmm. it is insanity.
Yes.
I listen to the news,
mm-hmm.
and I read. If you put mm-hmm. a bill before the House or the Senate, I read both versions, and then I read the compromise version of those because I read really fast. I grasp the language very well. And I like to know what I'm talking about. I listen to people talking, and they have never read the first line. They don't have any idea. They just have what somebody told them in a 9-second sentence, what it all was about, when if you read it, you realize they're liars, too.
Yes.
I have a slight obsessive-compulsive personality, so... and mine is about the acquisition of information, and it only came about from seeing how dumb I really was at 25
mm-hmm.
when I was struck by lightning. I mean, how little I knew about what was truly real.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just became obsessed. And like we talked earlier, everybody wanted me to go back to being that jackass because mm-hmm. the person I was becoming was frightening.
Yes.
You know, the nature of how I viewed things, and I think what my mother once said was tolerance, that mm-hmm. I had gone from a person, I'd listen to about 2 minutes of what you were saying, especially if you were speaking in a tone a little above what is normal, like you're mm-hmm. yelling or you're mad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd listen about 90 seconds of it, and then I would break your jaw.
Oh.
And knock you cold.
Wow.
Have no problem about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's at Sunday school. So when you see a person stop, listen, pay attention, instead of trying to defend a position, try to find resolution. You know, instead of knowing I was right, instead of arguing with them or going through it or being my normal other self before they had to call the paramedics, then I think my mother was most troubled by that. Because she would ask me about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, near-death experiences, they do affect those around us, not including ourselves. Like I said, it took me 2 years to figure out what I was doing after the second one because I knew I was put on a different path.
Okay, the first one was to realign your consciousness, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Okay, and then what was the second one about?
The second one about was getting me on path on purpose. I felt very dead inside. And I had prayed to my angels for some kind of sign. Well, yeah, well, we're just going to throw you on the other side again and, you know.
Yeah, let's kill the bitch. I got to figure it out. Ain't no problem, boy. They elbow at each other, pull a few feathers off each other's wings, and I got a good idea. Let's kill her.
Yeah.
I know. I have a very personal relationship with the other side. I think they're funny, and I appreciate them, but I'm not frightened or scared or any of that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. That's stupid. You know, I don't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was going to say I yell at my spirit guides often and my angels. So anyway, I swear.
Yeah, but let me tell you something too, Amy. Hospice makes that skill faster and better. Mm-hmm. I understand my empathic nature because I pick up so much stuff about people. I always laugh and say, you know, one day I never believed any of this. The next day I was dead. And the day after that, I became everything I never believed in. And I couldn't do anything but lie there mm-hmm. and deal with it mm-hmm. in pain that a human being cannot understand. It's like drinking battery acid. I burn from the inside out. It's horrible. And so I became there, I became in that place. But this is the point that really strikes me when people deal with this physical, mental world, okay? People think that emotions, Amy, are some spiritually connected reaction. And where all this came from was me talking about Raymond and how Raymond was literally destroyed as a human being and as a forensic psychiatrist. He wasn't a dummy. He had a PhD in philosophy, and he was a forensic psychiatrist, an MD and a psychiatrist. And I watched them destroy him. I watched his own people destroy him, literally drive him suicidal because he was just exploring something. He was just being a scientist and a researcher. Mm-hmm. And I looked at all of that, and one day I just came to this startling realization when people say, Daniel, why do you always keep saying no one left heaven? I said, well, let me ask you a question. Where are you? Mm-hmm. Okay, they said, well, I'm standing here in front of you. I said, well, let me ask you a question. The person is standing in front of me. Is composed of atoms, molecules, and cells, right? Mm-hmm. What's the physical body made of? Atoms, molecules, and cells.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I said, think about this. If you took an atom and you put it under an electron microscope, it would be 94.6% empty space. If you put a molecule under an electron microscope, it would be 98% empty space. If you put a cell under an electron microscope, it would be almost 99% empty space. So if you took all the empty space out of every atom, every molecule, and every cell of every body in the United States, that's 300 and roughly 20 million people, mm-hmm. If you took all the empty space out of every atom, every molecule, and every cell, the entire population of the United States would fit in one half of a regular size matchbox. Mm. So that's science. That's replicable science. Mm-hmm. That's established science in physics and quantum. Standard. Mm-hmm. So the next question is, if that's true, which it is true, exactly who are you and exactly where are you? You are a spiritual being with less than 2% of your true self, maybe 3% of your true self, enacted within the framework of this dimensional reality. We are dimensional beings. And it doesn't matter what people's opinion of that is. The whole cell, atom, molecule, and cell story is a scientific protocol. Tells you without question, do you think all of you is locked into 3% of what you viewpoint here?
No.
It's insane to even think it. It's crazy to think it. And then you start to really look at where you get inspiration from. Nobody knows where the memory is in the brain. Nobody knows. But the biggest fight that I watched Raymond get into was this. You either live in a dead universe, which is a bunch of chemical reactions. Love is not a, is just some chemical reaction, endorphin, serotonin reactions, and you're just a chemical. That means science went from physical Newtonian mechanics into chemical, which is the advent of penicillin in 1929, to now we're moving into quantum, that we're all energetic patterns. But the system that controls the pill-pushing pharmaceutical companies keeps you believing that you're chemicals because they can give you a pill to allow you to keep being who you are and doing what you now know is killing you, but doing it with some sense of satisfaction that you're in what's called a treatable illness as opposed to a death spiral. People talk about suicide, and somebody asked me the other day, Amy, they said, what do you think about suicide? I said, I'm trying to commit it. And they did just what you did, but they didn't laugh. They stopped and looked at me, and they said, you're committing suicide? I said, absolutely. I'm doing it with key lime pie. Every time I see it on the menu, I buy it. If I go to a restaurant, it doesn't have key lime pie, then I don't want any sweets. I don't care about it. But if it's got key lime pie, I just chalk it up to suicide. Bring me a big piece.
That's true. Actually, I love key lime pie. Anyway, but I'm committing suicide with you. We have these... I'm sorry, that was funny. This took me off guard. We have these preconceived notions that we go to hell when we commit suicide and believe in God, but I don't think that's true, do you?
No. Hebrew and Catholicism. This is where those come from. And it was a direct... It was a direct opposition to set up control, heaven and hell, because hell was in the middle. It was in the middle of the earth because it was molten, and you had volcanoes, and heaven was in the sky. Okay, someplace you could go and lift up, because in the Bible, there's never a description of angels with wings. It's Babylonian, and it became very noticeable in the Renaissance period, because a winged being, which was Apollo in Greek and Mercury in the Romans, had winged feet, so that angel means messenger. So how they could travel and fly, then we took the Babylonian concept from the occupation for the capture of the destruction of Israel, and when they were taken over by, I think, Nimrod and released by Nebuchadnezzar. So the Old Testament was written during the servitude of the 400 years that the Hebrews were in what is present-day Iraq, or Babylon, which is just outside of Baghdad, and they wrote the Old Testament. Because you see a lot of the epics of Gilgamesh interwoven between that. Hell, as we know it, is mentioned 8 times in the Bible, and most of the time it's about Jesus, and he's talking about a trash dump outside of Gethsemane, which were all the prisoners, all the executed people were thrown in this pit, and it would be burned. That's where in the Revelation of John you get the lake of fire, because
right.
we now understand it as methane, and we have trash dumps in America that are still burning and burn consistently. So they call those the lakes of fire. But the whole idea of hell as we know it, I think it was Clement II. I'm not sure. I think it was Leo X or Clement II. I can't remember right now. But he read Dante's Inferno in like 1513.
Right.
And then came Gutenberg's printing press.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you listen to fundamentalism on television on Sunday in the South, you are hearing an exact description of hell based on Dante's Inferno. And this Pope, he spread the word. So you had to create a place that you were going one or the other, black or white, based on the control mechanisms put on you by the religious doctrine. The Hebrews believe that if you kill yourself, you couldn't multiply.
Okay.
Hebrews have to keep multiplying. So suicide, why you have to be married, and why you have to have children. You know, Hebrews and Mormons have that same thing in common. So to kill yourself means you took away from population, which you had to grow the population because you try to keep it a pure Aryan race. In Catholicism, it means you took control of your own life and that you are openly rejecting the church and its teachings, and the church and its teachings have failed you spiritually if you killed yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two reasons why, because you're competing with religions, Hindu, Mithra, the legends of the peacock angel, Hindu, Buddhism. Buddhism is the void, Hindu is reincarnation, and that you could return, and you are competing with those.
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay.
I was just pondering how wild we get.
Yes, yes.
What people believe to be reality. And what I went through, and I'm not like expert in Catholicism or religions, but the same people who publish my books publish the Bible. So in the course of all these years, I've been ripping books off from them. I go and take a knapsack and fill it up with books, and then I read all the books that's pro and con and religion, because the biggest issue people have with reality is the Bible, what they believe religiously in the concepts of the Bible, or whether they believe what an electron microscope will show them with their own eye, and their faith in something is overpowered by the reality of how they exist. It's always been a little odd to me.
the whole concept, when I was growing up, I was raised Catholic, was totally insane to me. I knew that.
Easily to understand.
Very insane.
Yeah. And
a lot of it was.
No, it's complete indoctrination. You know, Jesus, the divine God could be wrong, but the church is never wrong. I mean, at that point was the place where people with decent sense, other than the ritualistic tendency to need to gather and to associate, you know, to build relationships, other than that, at that point, you lose the ability to believe that every word is in the Bible is the absolute truth, and then you secondarily interface within your own belief system and the ability to translate a religion.
Exactly. Yes.
I think religions are wonderful things as long as you don't take them too seriously.
Yeah, and I don't think the religions were to control, well, I don't think in the beginning, but I mean, I really just step back from organized religion in general. I just do. I just can't stomach it anymore.
Well, it depends on if you need to laugh. I mean, present-day religion is good for only its entertainment value.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I only deal with three things. If it has anything to do with having fun, getting to heaven, and making money, I'm interested. If it's not, keep it to yourself and go tell it to somebody else. On my phone, if you call me on my phone, it says, hello, everybody. This phone conversation has anything to do with getting to heaven, having fun, and making money. Please leave a message. If it doesn't, thank you for calling.
Very simple. Very simple. It's all very
because
simple.
Those are the three things that's important to me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the things that when I don't go off in a lot of different directions. I deal with the dying, and I deal with what issues that I can effectually put into place with the knowledge of my knowledge of what's next that I can bring back from over there and put into place to what's over here.
Mm-hmm.
That's my goal. This is what I, Daniel, want to do. And I'm proud of the Twilight Brigade, which anybody can go. I'm Daniel and Catherine, you know, .com, and I am the Twilight Brigade. Now, that's the foundation it's in its 20th year, and I'm proud. And we have a new book called 10 Things to Know Before You Go. And, you know, it's just like, you know, how I am, Amy. I'm always making fun of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So the first page of the book is this. What's the number one cause of death in America and most other countries? Big question mark. Turn to the next page, and it says, no matter what you thought, birth is the number one cause of death. And then you turn to the next page and it says, remember, if you are breathing, you are leaving. And if you just took a breath, this book is for you.
I love it.
Now think about that in the promo sheet.
Okay.
You know, when they send it out, you know, they send it out like to 1,000 radio shows and producers and TV shows. Just with that alone, I'll get all the majors.
I love it. That's great. That is so great. Well, Daniel, I think our time is running out. Where can people find you again?
Daniel, just D-A-N-N-I-O-N, and Catherine. But if you punch up Daniel and Catherine comes up. Or thetwilightbrigade.com. If you're interested in looking at what we're doing in innovation of palliative and in the end-of-life care and trying to expand the model to take on more integrative spiritual things as opposed to just chemical things, then it's The Twilight Brigade. And, Amy, thank you for doing your show, and thank you and the gentlemen who put us together. I thank you for doing what you're doing and keeping and opening people's hearts.
Well, thank you. Well, it's been a pleasure, everyone. This is Amy Toy for Angel Answers with Amy Toy, signing out. Thank you once again, Daniel.
Thank you very much, Amy.
Take care. Bye-bye.